She like the boys in the band. She loves the party like that. But you better watch your wallet. She cleaned out your pocket. She has a band.
I love you. Hello, my brothers and sisters, and welcome to a very, very special edition of Pastor Jack Radio. This is an investigation, an investigative report on the going-ons of psychiatric hospitals around the world, more specifically the one in Napa, California. We're going to talk to Brother Wayne Morin, Jr., who is a Progressive Universal Life Church peeper, a friend, a minister. He was an inmate there. He calls it an inmate. We're going to find out what's the difference between resident, inmate. Oh, so much to talk about. Brother Wayne Morin, Jr., in the Napa State Hospital, 18 years, said lots of criminal activity, doctors, other residents. Let's kick it off with some Tom Jones, though, before we call him up. I love you. Get ready. You ready?
Yeah! Cut me up. Give me some more.
Tom Jones, you ready, baby?
Oh!
Yeah, that's
let's
it.
Let's go.
One, two, time's coming for you. Three, four, going back to your door. Five, you have a lock of your teeth. Seven, eight, your voice to me.
Act right.
Maybe you forgot what it
feels like.
But you can't come
out. Oh! Well, my brothers and sisters, I pray you are having a blessed life. Don't forget to visit PULC.com. PULC.com. Become a legally ordained minister. Get your degree today. Also check out PastorJackRadio.com. ChurchOfTomJones.com. Oh, I love you.com. I do! Oh, my brothers and sisters. Oh, I love you so much. Just getting all the juices flowing there, the little TJ, huh? Before we give Brother Wayne Morin Jr. a call. Oh, man, you might want to call a friend and say, hey, tune in to PastorJackRadio.com right now, because Jack's talking to Wayne Morin Jr., and he's telling us about what goes on really in the Napa Hospital. Kind of like the Diane Sawyer thing, you know, and they're on 2020 or Primetime, whatever they're calling it now. Oh, you hear it all here on PastorJackRadio.com, my brothers and sisters. Oh, yeah. We get down and dirty. We find out the truth, because that's what Progressive Universal Life Church, Church of Tom Jones, is. It's about the truth. Because the truth, my brothers and sisters, will set you free. Why don't we try giving Brother Wayne here a jingle jangle? Mm-hmm. Hope you're living an abundant life. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Ooh.
Hello,
is this Brother Wayne Morin Jr.?
This is him.
Brother Wayne Morin Jr., this is Pastor Jack, and you, my friend, are on Pastor Jack Radio!
Great.
Oh, man, you, my friend, you have quite a story to tell. By saying you have a story to tell, that's not exactly right. You have stories to tell, and not crazy made-up stories. You have real life stories, things that we might only see on cable.
On cable?
I mean, the stories, it's almost as, from what I've read, Brother Wayne, when you read your writings, when you read the things that you talked about, that you've experienced, it seems incredible to people out in the outside world, just living, you know, life day to day, and we're doing things fine, we have our freedoms and everything. We can't believe the things that are going on that we don't know about.
Yeah, that's so true, Pastor Jack. And the thing about it is that more people are becoming aware of mental illness, and because the things that go on inside state hospitals, because there are so many people like 75% of the people in the United States are on some type of psychotropic drug or some type of medication.
Woo! What's that percentage?
I believe it's 75% now.
75% of people?
75%.
75?
Yeah, 75%.
Are on some type of mind-altering drug like Prozac? Or
Zoloft or, lithium.
Uh-huh.
Or you know, Zyprexa or Valium or Ativan or Clozaril. You know, it's and the thing about it is people are becoming more aware that, that the reason why these medications are out there is because the people are experiencing some type of mental illness, either through depression or through overeating or through some kind of, you know, no fault of their own, but just it probably not enough prayer too. So I'm going to put that in there.
Yeah.
But you know, Pastor Jack, today I'd really like to talk to you about some of the horrors that go on inside state mental hospitals.
Yeah, before we begin all that, Wayne, I do. I want you to feel free to tell us all the stories. Don't hold back. You certainly, you know, this is an uncensored program. I want to get right to the bottom of it. But tell us at the beginning how it was that you became a resident. You might call it an inmate, but over there at Napa State Hospital here in California, which is, I guess, a psychiatric hospital, right?
Yes, it is. It's a state mental hospital, yeah. State-run mental facility, yeah.
And is that a facility that people voluntarily go to, or that they are somehow, it's not a, you don't commit a crime and then go there, do you?
Well, you know, let me say, most of the people that go to any state mental facility nowadays have to at least be declared not guilty as a reason insanity. And by being declared not guilty as a reason insanity, what that does is it takes whatever charge you would have, either it be a felony or it be a two or three misdemeanors combined or a misdemeanor and five felonies. What it does is it puts that on hold. It takes those crimes away. You never get those crimes, but you're admitted to a state facility until they believe that you yourself have become not dangerous and able to live in the community again. So you actually don't get a charge of a crime when you go into a state facility, even though there's hundreds, and I mean, most of the facilities are either filled with either rapists or murderers or assault or arsonists or heinous people. But on the other side of the heinous people, there's heinous doctors and there's heinous staff members there also. And, you know, they're in programs, 12-step programs themselves. Can you imagine that, Pastor Jack?
Brother Wayne, you are fired up. I look at you. You're ready. I'm sure I've told your story thousands and thousands of times, and yet you're telling it as if it's the first time, because you really have dedicated your life now to revealing the criminal activity and pervertedness that goes on behind the walls there at State Mental Hospital. Have you not?
Yes, I have. And the thing about it, Pastor Jack, it's not just one hospital, Napa State Hospital. If you have a Google alert, and basically any Google alert you put in just state hospitals, you will be bombarded with at least 20 to 27 different hospitals in just the state of California, with either what rape goes on there that day, or what staff member was caught for selling drugs, or some kind of heinous gang fight that the staff's created, or and something to this matter. It's not an isolated incident. It's like when we used to hear of people, a black man or a Jewish man or a person that was living down south, they get put in these rooms and they never come out for stealing a pack of cigarettes. It's the same thing in a mental hospital, the state mental facilities today. You can go in for just being a person that went to jail and had a bad time in jail, got somebody tried to bully you, you said, hey, I'm hearing voices, I'm seeing things. And the psychiatrist said, well, okay, what we'll do is we'll send you out to the state hospital and end up doing the rest of your life there. That's how horrible the state, they're immune from all outside investigation. You get in there, don't think that you can just pick up a payphone and call the police to come and get help, because you can. They won't hear you. They'll listen to the head medical director. They'll listen to the people on the inside. They won't listen to you. And there's so many crimes that go on there. There's a code of silence.
Yeah.
It's just heinous, Pastor Jack.
Wait, did you happen to see the movie? I believe it was sometime in the 70s. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, the Oscar-winning film starring Jack Nicholson.
Oh, yes. That was a favorite. That was one of my favorite movies, especially because it was so true. You know, he just basically went to jail. He was a ruffian. And he went to jail, and he thought he could beat the system.
Uh-huh.
And he ended up realizing what the hospital was about, you know. And his friends, the big Indian and everybody in there, tried to show him love for the first time. He found love for the first time, but that's how it's still like that, Pastor Jack.
Are you telling me that this Nurse Ratched character that was such a villain in the motion picture, you're telling me that there are nurses, doctors, et cetera, like that, and perhaps even worse?
Oh, Jack, there's so much worse. There's been there's been women that came out to me before in the past and basically told me that the doctor had basically made them squat down and told them not to wear panties anymore. Excuse me out there, the people out there listening, but not to wear underwears. There's been people that that had favoritism to certain staff members that basically got any kind of drug he wanted, either be Ritalin or be Dexedrine or Ativan or Klonopin. You know, if they would show the other men their favors, the other doctors, psychiatrists' favors, that means, you know, sexual favors.
Uh-oh.
Or and there, I mean, the things that go on inside there are something that you would believe that once you're in there, you know, you're actually in a place called hell, you know?
Now, how did this start for you? How did you first enter the facility there at Napa State Hospital? What was it? Did you commit some sort of crime or what happened?
When I was 12 and a half, well, going on 12 years old, my mother basically was she was really a drug user. And basically, she was blowing marijuana smoke in my face since we were born. I had a brother and a sister, and we lived in Marin County. My mother was well-known with the musicians, Elton Bishop, the Sons of Chaplin, and San Francisco bands and stuff. And she basically didn't want me around the house smoking her marijuana and ripping her off her lid. So what she basically did is she got me up, drove me up to Napa State Hospital and admitted me there so she could get my food stamps and my welfare money. And she made me a fake identification and said if I'm ever in any trouble to basically use this, and what she'll do is she'll OR me while I'm in jail. She'll, you know, vouch for me while I'm in jail, but not to ever come back to the house. So Napa became one of the places that, while I was a child, it was like a revolving door for me. Every time I got out, I hit the streets, either went to San Francisco, Los Angeles, or Nevada or someplace, and lived on the street panhandling or hustling or doing what I had to do to, you know, to live in a cold, hard world, a teenager. And at the same time doing that, basically, you know, living my life in fear on the streets. This was back in the time when they basically had the Hillside Strangler out, and then they had the, you know, so many male predator serial killers in the 70s and the early 80s, you know. You know, it was very hard to live on the street.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, survive, you know. And I couldn't come home to my house because my mother would basically call her boyfriends and, you know, really try to beat the heck out of me. But to make the long story short, she, living in Napa State Hospital, when I went to Napa State Hospital was at that time of the age, I basically, drugs were flowing in Napa State Hospital, marijuana speed, methadrine, Ritalin. My doctor prescribed me basically a Ritalin, and I was on Ritalin, and I was given Ritalin by an outside doctor from the street, and basically they were giving it to me. I had sex with staff members as a minor.
Did you have sex with both men and women, or just women, or just men, or?
But at that time, you know, both.
Both.
Both, yeah.
And do you think that you needed to be in some sort of mental hospital or psychiatric hospital? Do you feel like that you did need some sort of help?
Well, you know, I was raised in a dysfunctional family. I'll be telling you that right from the beginning. I was raised in a dysfunctional family. We had no father. My mother must have had, you know, many boyfriends, and you can hear them going up and down the stairs.
You had a lot of uncles,
so
to speak.
And basically, you know, there was nothing but sex going on and drugs and acid. My mother took us to our first LSD trip to the Fillmore West and to the Coliseum, and we all took LSD to go there together to see the Stones and stuff. Matter of fact, the Stones was on TV last
year. Yeah, the Super Bowl.
Yeah. He's looking a little old, you know.
Oh, but man, he's in great shape, right?
Yeah, well, you know, they let him on the court, so, you know, he had to do something right, so. There was a big issue about letting Nick on or not because he's too old to hit the ground, but he made it up there, you know, and basically what I wanted to say is that, you know, my mother was one of the best-dressed women at the Rolling Stones concert back in that when they were at the Coliseum back then.
Yeah.
In the newspaper San Francisco Chronicle. My parents really knew quite a bit of musicians. She went backstage with lots of them. She'd been up to Garcia's house. But getting back to what I was doing up, Pastor Jack.
Was your mom a groupie?
My mother was, yeah. She was definitely backstage.
Did she meet Mick Jagger?
No, she never got to meet Mick Jagger. Basically, she had an article that the San Francisco Chronicle printed, and it had her face and her all dressed up in her in her fur coat and stuff.
Yeah.
She said, best dressed woman at Rolling Stones concert, and she had it there. They had her picture. It was in the Sunday page.
Who are some?
The old pink page.
Yeah. Who are some of the celebrities that she did meet?
Basically, Elton Bishop, Rod Stewart, the Sons of Chaplin.
For Rod Stewart, would she go back and meet him and actually perform sexual favors on him?
I wouldn't know about any of that. I think she would do it, but I don't know if she
did.
I try to stay to the accurate things,
It's not something you want to hear about your mother anyway.
Basically, if it's going to help somebody out there, in this world, basically realize that, these horrors do happen and there's a better life out there, Pastor Jack, So that's all I'm really trying to do, is trying to open up these avenues for people that are inside the hospitals, the families that are outside, that when their son or daughter says, hey, Mom, this is going on, or hey, Dad, this is going on, and they're saying, well, it can't be going on. They hear me on the radio, or they hear, the church, I hate to say this, but the Scientologists and the CCHR, Pastor Jack, they really don't do anything for the state mental facilities. They do everything for the private practices, but when it comes into the state mental hospitals, they don't do hardly anything. Because there's that, what do you call it? And I'm going to break it out right now.
No, break it out. Break it down.
It's called confidentiality.
Yeah.
The Scientologists can't go in there and get anybody's charge to read if the complaints are true because of the confidentiality law. But if they're in a community, if it's a private practice, the two people can do that, meet themselves and do that. But when you're in a hospital, the people that run the hospital and the staff members and the doctors and the psychiatrists are not just going to let any old client give their chart over to Scientology, and it really can't be done.
Yeah, well, isn't it true that Tom Cruise, you probably saw him recently talking about how he doesn't really believe in psychiatric help and all that stuff? Is that right? Have you seen that?
Yes, I have. I've seen that.
Do you side with him, or do you say that there is?
Well, let me tell you, Pastor Jack, I'm in a program right now, and it's probably one of the best things I ever had in my life. I'm in a CONRAP program. What that basically is that's a group of people that work with mental health, and mental health, the people with mental health that are working with me are on board me going out here and singing like the canary about the hospital. So they're on board with me telling on the crimes and the horrors that go on in that place. So, they're making sure that I have a program, they're making sure I have food. For the first time in my life, I really feel that accomplishment going on here. So I can't say that mental health is a bad thing. Mental health is a beautiful thing if you use it the correct way. But the people that are running those state facilities are doing nothing, and they're trying to pass the buck. If you look at my database site, American Nightmare, that site has, hundreds upon hundreds of news articles from either the Chronicle, the San Francisco Gate, the Napa Register, papers all over the United States that speak of Napa State Hospital. The Department of Justice has tried to crack down on that place so many times and tried to get in there, and the Department of Justice has been told that they can't go in now. But I've been talking to the Department of Justice, and things slowly but surely in Washington, D.C. are opening up. And they're not just opening up in Napa, they're opening up in Patton, they're opening up in San Bernardino, they're opening up in Atascadero. A lot more of these things are coming to head. A lot more people are realizing that crimes do happen in state hospitals committed by the doctors and the staff and the people that work there. Not only the clients that are, using the bathrooms for havens of rape, but clients that are using their connections from the outside to get them in drugs, the street drugs and the gangs. But there is an element of people that work there that are callous and criminals, and they are immune, and it doesn't need to be like that. Especially when it comes to the family members and the stuff, and the people that are in there that deserve to get out there, not be there for the rest of their life over someone not liking them. It becomes so inhumane. It becomes they're like sadists. They're sadomasochists, when they treat some of the people. They just treat them lesser than dirt or lesser than cattle. And I've seen it, and now that I'm out, I'm so happy that I'm able to tell on them. I talked with the police at the hospital. I gave them 2 hours worth of talking about the rapes and the crimes and the drug usage that I knew about when I was there. And it wasn't just enough, Pastor.
Ooh.
It wasn't enough. It wasn't enough for me I needed more time. The 2 hours that they gave me wasn't enough.
We're talking to Brother Wayne Morin Jr., who's on here, and he's exposing the horrors that go on in state mental hospitals. He was an inmate, as he would call it, in the Napa State Psychiatric Hospital for 18 years. He's out now, and man, he's on a rampage. He's letting everybody know what's going on. Wayne, tell us some of the experiences you witnessed firsthand, things that actually happened to you and things that you saw.
Things that I actually saw?
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, like I said, that, you know, Pastor Jack, I would go home with staff members and basically, you know, we'd inject either, you know, Ritalin, or we'd inject Dexedrine, or we would use speed at the house and have sex, you know, on passes that were illegal because I was still a minor going into young adult. I was a young adult, and they would take me to their house. When I was 13 and 14 years old, I would go home with staff members and stay at their place at Fairfield and smoke nothing but dope and marijuana with them.
Well, why is this? Why do you think it is, Wayne, that it's going on? I mean, it can't be. You don't think that they purposely hire people like this, do you? I mean, do you think that these people are?
Let me just say this: in the mental health industry, Pastor Jack, in the 70s and the 60s and the 70s and the early 80s. There was more people that were working in the mental facilities that were like the hippies, the heads, the long hairs, that were doing that type of work. And most of them, 90% of them did smoke marijuana. Probably about 75% of them today smoke marijuana. That's not the big issue here, going on the witch hunt for marijuana. What it is this showing that they have keys, they have the power to go home themselves at night. But at the same time, they have the power to commit laws that are breaking the laws. And that shouldn't be done. If they're going to work at a place, whatever they do in their bed, in their house, whatever lifestyle they have, that's their own. But when they come to work, they shouldn't be bringing marijuana. They shouldn't be smoking. They shouldn't be using that keys. There should be a responsibility to working at a place like that and having the keys, you know, to go home at night and not.
On some of the things I've read about you and your experiences, Brother Wayne, you also mentioned the fact that at these at the Napa State Mental Hospital, you actually saw, and perhaps this happened to you, people being used as guinea pigs for perverted experiments. What do you mean by that?
Well, perverted experiments. Well, you know, it's more like, let me just say, it's more like, you know, the inside, every unit in the hospital. Now listen to this. This would be a shocker for people.
Sure.
That are listening. Now get your ears ready, listeners.
I'm ready.
In every room, like you and I are talking, in every place down the hall, every hallway, every kitchen, every toilet, there's an intercom system. And so the office of every unit or every pod in every building has, you know, an intercom, so they can hear exactly what's going on either in the hallway, or they can hear exactly what's going on in the bathroom, or they can hear what's going on in the yard, or they can hear what's going on in the you know, the kitchen, you know, anybody talking. So when there's a rape being performed in the bathroom, or when there's somebody beating the heck out of somebody else in the room, they know about these things. They do nothing. And that's one way that you could say that's pretty you know, no protection, but they can hear it in the office. Now you just think, go ahead and think about that for a minute, how scary that must be for the clients that are in there to know that every single unit has the intercom's on there and nothing is being done when someone's beaten up. No one's going to the rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposed to be doing that. They're supposed to use those intercoms for protection, and they don't. Another thing that goes on in there is that the staffs get peoples to basically argue with other peoples. They have, it's sort of like a soap opera, something that you watch as the world turns. Inside the office, what they'll do is they'll have four or five clients that they don't like, and what they'll do is they'll be the stirrers. They'll be out there disturbing the clients and making sure that, you know, some people get beat up and making sure that some people are stayed back. You know, it's just a vicious circle that goes on in these units.
Why do you think that goes on? Why do you think that these people do that?
Because basically what I'm starting to believe is that, and what I've believed then is that they have it, the staff members that are there, they call the clients job security. That means that every client there, Pastor Jack, is worth more than $100,000 a year per client. And there's only 114 patients at Napa State Hospital. So that's more than $142 million a year that they have on just those clients. So the taxpayers' dollars, they don't want to get any of these people that come from Pelican Bay and San Quentin coming in there when they have a nice little boot basket of people that they can keep manipulating and keep So every time a person starts doing good and is about ready to leave, they send somebody up to them to destroy it. They have three open units in that hospital, Pastor Jack, since I've been out. In 2003, I don't know of any other person that's gotten out of that hospital.
How were you able to get out? How'd you get out?
I got out because UC Davis, which is part of the Napa State Hospital program now, thank God for that. And if you can, Pastor Jack, say a prayer for UC Davis. Those people are really great. And they have to come into the hospitals, the state hospitals now, and go through the client's charts in front of the doctors. They have to read over the material on any client that's been there for a long time. And since I was there for 18 years, they went over my chart, and they said, what the heck is this guy doing here still? I mean, what's going on? And what they did is they had a town hall meeting, which was in the AB rec room, and they went over my charts, and the doctors and the staff decided to give me a chance, and they said, it's time for me to leave. But if it wasn't for them, I would probably still be here.
Had you been writing letters?
Yes, I basically, but when they found out about it, Pastor Jack, they weren't happy when I was writing.
No.
Well, I have one of the letters right in front of me, which is very, very beautiful. I wrote it to 60 Minutes. I wrote it to the Dateline. I wrote it to basically all the big television programs that would do any kind of exposing. I wrote it to 48 Hours and...
Primetime, 2020,
48 Hours.
Anybody that you could think of that might be able to help you, that you see on TV doing these investigative stories, Diane Sawyer, Barbara Walters, John Stossel.
Fox Files. I wrote to all of them. And when they found out that I wrote to them, they told me to take down the material that you see mostly on the internet. They told me, take this stuff down or you're
take
never
going to take it down.
They told me to take it down.
Toe the line. Take it down and toe the line. Keep your mouth shut.
You know, I said, well, I didn't put it up. I didn't know how to take it down.
Yeah.
They said, well, either you take it down or you'll be in a lot more trouble. So what I did is I contacted my brothers, and thank God for my brothers. What they did is they went to these right of prisoner sites, and they got it taken off. And what it was is that from the right of prisoner sites and stuff, it got put on the Wayback Machine. And then I have a friend since I've been out. He basically found this stuff, and that's how me and him started corresponding. He wanted to start the site back up again, and that's what he did. His name is Wes Pernier, and he's really a good man. And I mean, I can't say more to him that he's such a blessing to me and the families out there. I get hundreds of emails a month, Jack, and family members that I don't even know on how they get my email address because I leave it on a couple of sites, the X Zone and ZepNet, and basically these people are basically. They write to me and tell me how they're, thank you so much for saying these things. Now that I believe in my daughter saying the truth, for a while I didn't know, or my son, he's saying that drugs and sexual abuse does go on. Thank you. You know, we really don't know what to do, but as long as we know it's true and going on there, we'll keep our hopes up for our son. I mean, the emails are just tear-wrenching, you know, tear-jerking. And I get emails from senators and congressmen, too, saying, you're really doing a really good job, Pastor. I mean, David Sadler, you know, he basically has wrote me numerous times, and he's a congressman, and he basically told me, keep up the good work, you know, and I'm hoping Ron Paul and some other people out there will get on board. Maybe I can do a documentary about this place, because people need to go in there and walk around with a microphone, and hoping that Michael Moore mm-hmm. will jump on board on this and let me be in his new documentary, you know?
Yeah, if he does a thing on Columbine, why not a thing on the Napa State Hospital?
He is doing something right now right now he's doing something in the X Zone. Just wrote to him and told, this is what the email says, Dear Wayne, Michael Moore has asked us for information regarding health care and injustice. I hope you don't mind. I gave him your contact information. I don't know if he'll use the information or not, but be prepared just in case. Best wishes always, Laura Rogers, senior producer of the X Zone Radio. I'm just hoping that Michael Moore will look over the material that you happen to see and basically, because $100,000 a year is a taxpayer dollars, and the way they're using them, Pastor Jack, is just not right. You know, they're just not doing anything. The food in there is lousy. The walls are cold. I've had other staff members, Lucky Myers, on a couple talk shows with me, which she worked there from 1999 to 2002 or something. She came on and verified the rapes do happen, pregnancies do happen, drug uses does happen. And that's on my other site, the Wayne Warren tape site. So on there, it's not just a client babbling his brains out. We have staff members that work there that say the same thing that I'm saying. So, you know, I mean, basically, something needs to be done, you know. And the other hospitals that these things are going on, something needs to be done there, too, you know.
Wayne, what kind of mind control goes on? How do they control a person's mind? Is it? I know they with the drugs and the alcohol and that kind of thing. What else?
Scare tactics. What do you call it? Fear tactics, scare tactics, food deprivation, sleep deprivation. I mean, just the basic things that you would see when you go to boot camp. Basically, they do the same. They use those same tactics on breaking people down and making them more calm or more weak-minded, so they can break them and, you know, load them up on medications, either it be Haldol or be Ferlixin or be Ativan or be Klonopin. I one time was used, check this out, one day I was used a client who was about 6'3". He basically collapsed in front of the unit office. Basically, I told this to the police department in Napa on January 13th, basically told them that the two Filipino women came out and gave me and one of my friends, Abel Cota, the heart paddles to try to revive this man. He stands at 6'3". And he weighed like one, just close to 400 pounds, and he was in base leg restraints and waist restraints. That means his eyes were, his arms were tied to his waist, and his legs were shackled together while he walked around because he was so big. And when he collapsed to the ground, because he had been on injection after injection after injection of Ativan, Klonopin, Haldol, all that, when he passed out, these two Filipino women passed these heart paddles to me and another person, and he died right on the spot. But I'm sure, you know, the family member doesn't know exact what happened in that time, but I'm hoping that since I went to the police department, I filed the stuff with the police department, that family will be able to hear the truth and maybe start a lawsuit on that, you know, because, you know, you don't give clients at a mental hospital heart paddles to try to revive a client. What
right.
you do is you call a paramedics or you call right. a doctor that knows how to use them. You don't hand the paddles to a client.
Well, is there ever a time that you are privy to where maybe somebody who worked there saw what was going on and said, I just can't, I got to get out of here.
There have been quite a few staff members that I've known that have done that, that basically said, you know, they just couldn't take it anymore. You know, they basically stopped working there through the years, Dave Williams was one of them. Dave Williams has said he just couldn't take it anymore. He didn't quit, but he stayed as long as he could. And one of the reasons why he did basically leave at the end is because his wife was having so much troubles in the hospital. She was always in and out of the hospital having either all sorts of complications. And he himself just got so tired of the way the hospital was being run, he quit. Now, Lucky Myers is another one. And these people just, you know, couldn't basically take, once they realized what the corruptness and the code of silence, and there's no way to get out of it, you know, unless you just quit. And even when you quit, it can be very dangerous, because look at all those things that you know about, you know.
Well, and I was going to ask you about that, Brother Wayne. Now that you are speaking out about what goes on in these state mental hospitals, specifically the one you were at here in Napa, do you worry for your life, your safety?
Well, you know, Pastor Jack, one of the things is, you know, you have to worry about when you cross the street sometimes. You have to worry about... But I'm in a program, and my program's for what I'm doing. They know that I'm doing the right thing. People in the community, basically, that where I live around, I basically know what I'm doing. My grandmother, and plus there was a law that came out when Clinton was in office, basically said that when a person is in a state facility, he basically has the right to be heard if he's going to try to bring up any charges. And that's why my Conrad, Bruce, and that's why Robin at Mental Health here in Napa are so adamant about me being able to say what I can say and do, because they themselves know that Clinton came out with that law, and with Clinton and the Patients' Rights Advocacy in Sacramento and Washington, D.C., and the Department of Justice, I'm pretty safe on what I'm doing, you know?
Yeah.
Even though sometimes I know that I won't drive by the hospital and take, I won't go over there if I have to, you know? I'll still get willies when I drive over there. When I'm in that area, I still remember how corrupt they were. They just, oh, well, you know, Wayne got out of the car. Well, too bad. We'll just lock him in the car and drive him back over here, you know? And it's that scary, Pastor Jack, when you see that people are, when they know that crimes are, you know, are going on in the hospital and they just basically continue to do it. But they have the keys, Pastor Jack. That's the thing. They go home at night, and you're locked in there. That's the whole thing. They go home at night, and you're locked in.
Well, Brother Wayne, do you think it's all state-run mental hospitals? that has this criminal activity, the corruption, etc., or not?
Well, I sure do. I think every state mental hospital that I've read about and everyone that I've known about has corruption there. And the more and more Department of Justice and other organizations, patients' rights advocacy, and NAMI, and these mental health programs and agencies that are coming to make these things aware. Even Human Rights International now has jumped on board about exposing the crimes that go on in hospitals, not just, you know, Scientology and Citizens Commission, Human Rights International. That's a private thing. They really don't do, like I said before, state facilities. But, you know, it seems that, you know, more and more organizations and people are becoming aware, because there's just too many crimes, too many deaths, too many rapes, too many murders. There was just a rape out here at Napa State Hospital just recently that basically a man basically gave another client AIDS. He raped him and gave him AIDS, and basically, you know, things like that go on, you know. And I could just imagine how many other people he raped while he was out there. And are those clients going to be released into the community? Are they going to be given some kind of compensation and put in a board and care home and given some TLC because they only have a little time left to live now? Or are they going to just stay there for the rest of their life? There's so many things that need to be answered, so many things that need to be looked at better, you know. And mental health, since it's a learning, something that we learn as we go along when we learn about mental illness, and it's a growing industry that we need to, you know, start cracking down on the things that we know are wrong and clean those things up, and then go back to what we know has been working for a while. There needs to be some work done. I mean, quite a bit of work done in the mental health industry, especially the state facilities. You know, the private practices is a whole different story, Pastor Jack, you know. But, you know, you look at the state-run facilities, so many people, once they get to jail, what is the overcrowding in the jail from? It's because 75% of the people in jail have a mental illness, and 40% of those people are waiting to go to state hospitals, and they're just overloaded. They're overworked. They can't get in, and that's because the state hospitals pick and choose. They shouldn't be able to have a right to pick and choose. And they do, you know.
Well, what is your ultimate goal, Brother Wayne? Is it to shut down all these state-run mental hospitals, or?
No. The state-run mental hospitals need to be there, and they definitely need to, you know, what they need to do is just clean up their act. They need to reevaluate. They need to take some time and get some professionals in there and reevaluate, especially when it comes to the code of silence and being immune from outside clients, which deserve to be able, if they're being hurt or they're being sexually abused, or they know of crimes that are going on there, either be from the staff or another client, they need to be able to tell somebody, not somebody that works at the hospital, that's just going to pass that complaint form right into the round file. That's what goes on at the state hospitals. Most state hospitals have their own little agency that takes care of the crimes there. And what it usually happens is any kind of either harassment or sexual abuse or rape, the district attorney never gets to see it. Or drug abuse or a beating or assault, the district attorney never hears what he does. But it does, it goes right into the round file. It goes into a patient's rights protection program they have there, and they're getting paid from the head medical director. They need to clean that up. They need to have an outside organization come in there and work at the facilities and do the one-on-ones with the complaints, or set something up. I don't know, but that needs to be taken care of.
Brother Wayne, what I'd like to do is I'd like to ask all the listeners right now, all around the world, if they would just listen right now and close their eyes and agree in prayer. And Brother Wayne, maybe you'd like to say a prayer and ask people for some help. Would you like that?
Yes, I would.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Heavenly Father, I ask you in your precious Son's name, Jesus Christ, through His precious blood, I ask you for the families and the peoples and that are in the mental hospitals and the people that work there too. I ask you for anybody out there that has an ear, that's either in law enforcement, that's in media, that's in some type of college doing an essay or something, that can help me expose these horrors and put a light a little bit more on these criminal things that are going on, this immunity. I ask you, because you say that if I ask you and take command over your angels in the Bible, it says if I ask the angel, you will do that for me, Jesus Christ, and I'm asking you now. Thank you very much. And thank you, everybody out there.
And all those foul devils that are coming in to try to keep you from exposing the truth, Brother Wayne, I cast them out right now in God's name. You got your foul devil trying to keep Wayne from telling the truth and contacting Primetime in 2020 and everything. I cast you out right now in God's name. You got your foul devil. You go! There goes that devil. Brother Wayne, I continue success to you, and I hope that you get the word out and everybody listens, and I hope that they end up making a movie on you, and I hope that all this stuff is done and everything that you want to happen happens, and I hope that you continue with your program and all you see, and you get all the great things that you have coming to you.
Thank you so much, Pastor.
Woo!
So much people out there. And Pastor Jack, is there any way I can get this show sent over to me?
I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Brother Wayne. I'm going to put it up there on the stream right now, and you can listen all the time, and you can tape it off the stream, and you can send it, you can have it for your personal use, and you can send it to whoever you want to.
Thank you so much.
Woo! You made the devil your bitch today.
Thank you, Pastor Jack.
Brother?
You bitch devil.
Yeah. Amen and amen. Goodbye, Brother Wayne.
Goodbye, brother.
Woo!